Hi, Jay Youngdahl. Welcome to KABU.
Well, thanks for having me.
Jay Youngdahl is a practicing lawyer. His office is in Texas. He represents poor people, workers, civil rights struggles, unions, actually throughout the South. Serves as a union trustee on pension funds. He's also written a great deal, particularly warning unions by exposing how Wall Street brokers, fund managers, are exploiting the pension funds and the retirees. He also writes on how the funds, often large pools of money, could be used for workers and often are not. Because of his expertise, he has also operated as a fellow or researcher at various think tanks, and he's now a visiting professor at the Murphy Labor Institute at the City University of New York. I read his recent article in the journal New Labor Forum titled Bolstering Retirement Security, which we will talk about, indeed, more than bolstering, because many, there is very little retirement security, and that includes many who don't qualify for Social Security. Jay, tell us about what's the big problem for all of us, not just us oldsters, about pensions and income security.
Well, as a society, we want to make sure that all folks in the society are treated well, and certainly the oldest among us. People claim to be for that, but unfortunately, if you look at what's happened in our country in an increasingly accelerating rate, older people cannot expect a dignified and healthy old age. And it's become a crisis, and it's a crisis throughout the country, from the East Coast to the West Coast. There's a variety of reasons for it, like health care, pensions are complicated. But it's something that can be done and should be done. I think there's no question that there is the political feelings among people that something should be done. And so for me, the issue is to try to clarify what the problems are, what the potential solutions are, and hopefully a movement forms to move in that direction.
Let's talk about the old system, which is now in very rapid decline, the defined guaranteed pension from your company. There were a lot of people, actually, who enjoyed that, including auto workers. Certainly not a majority, but it was a considerable group of people who could rely on a decent pension. That's ended, is my sense.
That's pretty much right. When one gets older, that you have a risk about having enough money in order to live and do what you need to do, especially as your body and mind start to deteriorate. And in the past, we had a system that made the risk a collective risk, a communal risk, and it was called defined benefit plans. And workers were promised, in exchange often for wages or things they gave up in collective bargaining, that they would receive a certain defined benefit at a certain age that they could count on. And so the risk, you might say, was put together because the younger workers at the location were worked, kept putting money in. And so there was that communal feeling, and the risk was on the pool. Since then, however, this risk is being transferred to individuals themselves. Some folks can carry that risk, but most of us can't carry that risk. And so they've switched from what's called defined benefit to defined contribution. Around 1980, a third of the workers had in our country had really a very good defined benefit plans that protected them, they could count on. That number has fallen from that number to 2%.
2%. Those are mostly public employees right now, is that right?
Well, right. So the 2% is of people who only have defined benefits. And what's happened is that we've been kind of sold this bill of goods that we can switch to something called defined contribution. And that's like a 401k, where you put in a certain amount of money every year from your job or every month. And then you have a certain amount of money at the end, and you have to figure out how you're going to spend the money or how you're going to allocate it over the years. The problem with that plan is it puts everything, all the risk, on the individual. And the way they're set up, people are able generally to take money out of there. So in these precarious times, many, many people have taken all their savings out of 401ks. As soon as you're able to put some money in, within a month or two, you need to take it out for health care or for whatever. So at this point, the average person has just a few dollars in their 401k, and many, many people have none at all.
And the median is, however, about $24,000, I think you wrote.
That's exactly right.
$24,000, the income per year, even if you're really lucky, is is a little over $1,000, even if it's well invested, which many of them aren't. It's nothing. Basically, they've done away with the pension, except for the really high earners who supplement by putting a lot of money into a 401k.
No, that's right. There's a few little green shoots that are coming up. California has a program called Secure Choice that's going to be a little helpful. But essentially, it's a disaster right now for older people. I just saw an article about situation in Maine. And in Maine, I think a majority of the seniors have no private pension. About 35% of Maine seniors are now at risk for going hungry. And it's because they don't have any pension. And it's a crisis.
And poor people who have not had covered employment or who work in the gray economy, who don't have enough quarters on Social Security, they can wind up with nothing or sort of a minimum payment, which is like $800 a month that you can't possibly live on. They're just forced out on the streets, and there's going to be more and more people in that position.
Well, that's right. And as you see what's called the fissuring of the economy, we have more and more folks working in so-called gig jobs, working for Uber or delivering food. But you're essentially putting no money away. And so those folks are going to have nothing when they finally retire. One of the scandalous things in this area is that there are a number of so-called progressives, especially on the West Coast, who laud this kind of gig work for the freedom and the flexibility. Yet there's no discussion about how that kind of job can keep a person not only alive now, but can allow one to put some money back for one's retirement when they get older.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, although some people then have to move in with their kids. And what you have is poor people, precarious people, huddling in rental homes or whatever, hoping that their health care doesn't disappear. This is KBOO Radio. Bill Resnick here for The Old Mole. I'm talking today with Jay Youngdahl on pensions and how they are disappearing. The crisis now for older people. We've talked about private pensions and how they are offered to nearly nobody today. That is a decent pension, being replaced by 401ks that are hopeless, managed by brokerage firms and all sorts of investment advisors who take big fees. They don't sound that big at the beginning, but it becomes a very large amount of money over the years.
Well, that's true. In your state, Oregon, has one of the worst records. The Oregon Investment Board taking money that's set aside for Oregonians and their pensions and shoveling those to Wall Street. They were involved in putting money into the Toys R Us closing and some of those other things. And it's really, it's a sad thing for a pretty progressive state like Oregon to be involved in.
Well, it advertises itself as progressive, but on a lot of issues, it's not at all. Let's get to Social Security, because, in fact, whereas the benefits are pretty secure right now for the aged, there's a lot of powerful groups, and powerful in Congress and powerful in the Democratic Party even, that almost succumbed to a great reduction in Social Security during the Clinton years. But in any event, there are those who want to save Social Security by limiting benefits in a lot of ways, making it actually less and less useful for working people. Tell us about what's happening with Social Security.
Sure. I mean, if you look at the 20th century in the U.S., Social Security and then number one and maybe Medicare number two are really the crowning glories of our society. If you judge a society by how well it treats its own people, especially those considered the least among us, Social Security and Medicare are really fantastic. They continue to be fantastic. But now there is a concerted attack on Social Security. In fact, there's been one for a number of years, and it comes from three different places. One is kind of an anti-government feeling that the right wing stirs up. I mean, the Koch brothers finance a lot of that. We see that in all kinds of different ways, think tanks, lobbyists, et cetera. And they make up stuff like Social Security's broke. Social Security's not broke. Never has to be broke, never will be broke, unless people try to break it. But the second is, it's part of the so-called great risk shift. As you were saying, even some progressives think, why should I take on the risk of helping my fellow citizens? Because I'm more meritorious than they are. I'm smarter than they are. I went to better school, and they're just kind of lazy, or they don't work very hard. And why should we all be together like that? And the third is that the amount of money that can go to Wall Street and the different private equity and hedge funds is just enormous. That's another source of money for those who are lobbying to do away with Social Security. And unfortunately, a number of people have been kind of hoodwinked about that, mainly, frankly, because those forces put money into think tanks. Think tanks hire academics, and for a lot of academics, they either want that second job or they want that first job. And then you can't rock the boat too much on the person who's giving you the money. And so we see some of that, especially in the New York City area. I've seen some of that recently. So the attacks are coming from those three places. At this point, we've been able to hold it off, mainly, I think, because the American people realize what would happen to grandpa or grandma or dad or mom or themselves if there was no Social Security. And so there hasn't been the political appetite for it. But my suspicion is that in both your and my lifetime, we're going to be fighting this battle until we pass away. So it's an important battle at this point. We're ahead, but it's one we have to keep a very close eye on because it's a wonderful program.
We're ahead, but they've put a lot of energy into convincing the young that Social Security is just broken. It can't keep paying its benefits, and it's really just you're subsidizing all those older people who already have enough money. That sort of idea has caught on with at least some of the young, I'm afraid. They're not going to do away with Social Security. That would create a revolutionary situation that they don't want to face. I think their strategy, though, is to gradually cut away at it and reduce it so it becomes less and less important. One way they could do it is just by cutting the cost of living allowance, right? Or another way they could do it is just by raising the age of retirement. It's just a percentage here, a percentage there. But in 10 or 20 years, what you've done is just destroy the program.
Well, the age issue is an important issue because in our society, people do different jobs. So one of the things I've done during my career is work in workers' compensation areas where people have been hurt. Well, if you're a warehouse worker and you hurt your back, you can't work anymore. But if you're a banker and you hurt your back, you can still work. And it's the same way with the kind of age thing. If you've been a construction worker or a hotel maid or some of these things your whole life, your body breaks down much more quickly than, let's say, you're some kind of bond salesman or stock salesman or something like that. So for those folks and those kinds of occupations, having, let's say, a 70-year-old retirement age may not seem like much of a problem, while for the working class, it's nearly impossible. But the narrative, as you said, with young people is to say, well, age is just a number, and everybody should work until as long as they can. And, you know, there's all these great things about work itself, which I do think there are good things about work if you can do it. But they've taken that narrative and are using it against us, like you say, and convincing groups such as some young people that Social Security age doesn't make any difference. And in fact, it ought to be moved up. The other thing is that what you alluded to is what I think is one of the bigger problems in society is the narrative of individualism. In our country, we've always had some narrative of individualism, but we've had times in which the communal or collective instinct has taken over, and those are some of the times that, frankly, our country has done some of its best things. But the individualistic narrative now, which is being pushed throughout society, just happens to be really good for wealthy people and just happens to be really poor for working people. And so one of the things that I work on is trying to think of ways to talk to people about that narrative and to highlight places in our society in which a communal or a collective impulse has had a wonderful effect.
Well, certainly climate change is going to change everything. Fairly soon, people are going to realize they're all in the same boat, and we really have to take control of our economy and reconstruct it completely, and can't leave the poor behind. Tell us about the solutions.
Right. Well, the first solution is to try to protect the few private pensions that are left. That is, those workers who I've been involved in a lot of union negotiations in which the workers gave up a certain wage increase in order to have a pension. Some of those are being taken away. So everything that we can do to help protect the pensions that we have is important. In Washington now, there's a Senate committee on this. It's not making any headway, but maybe after the first year, we'll make some headway. The second is to fight like hell on Social Security, to not only keep it as good as it is now, but to try to improve it, improve the cost of living. And the third is to help people to put money away, and there are certain kind of default things one can do to allow more money to be saved, but it's got to be saved in a way that it stays away from those Wall Street vultures. Because if you look at the effect of fees, if you look at the effect of complexity in terms of what people have saved in their 401ks, that's problem number one. Unfortunately, of the solutions at this part to private savings, has that issue, the issue of fees and Wall Street greed, been addressed? We all understand why, but it needs to be addressed. And so if we did those three things, and there's movements in each of the areas, and there's a strong political constituency, I believe, in the American people for this, if it's explained and a movement can be fostered, to protect ourselves and to really move to a period in which, in our so-called golden years, we're able to do the things and to have the kind of security that people should have, the human beings should have.
Jay Youngdahls, thanks so much for talking to us. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, and you too.
When that old age pension check comes to our door, we won't have to dread the poorhouse anymore. Though we're old and bent and gray, good times will be back to stay when our old age pension check comes to our door. When our old age pension check comes to our door.